Mr. Stagg, I've got 9:30. We have a hard stop today at 10 minutes to 11, as a lot of people on this call want to be a part of the municipal partners call that takes place at 11 from public health. So we'll probably go ahead and get started. You want to do a roll call right quick, or at least by region, to make sure that we have a quorum?
Please do.
Okay. North region, I see Chief Pope and Chief Holt. South region, I see Chief Poole. Who else is on from the south?
Herman.
Okay. East region.
Chief Smith's on.
Hey, Chief Smith. East region.
Lee.
Cool. West region, Chief McGee sent me a note. He's going to be a little bit late getting on. Is anybody else on from the west? And hey, Chief Sasser. And we have David Handy on as our citizen rep. And, of course, Mr. Stagg, you are here, so you have a quorum.
Okay. Welcome, everybody. I hope everybody had a great holiday, a very Merry Christmas, and hopefully 2021 will clear a lot of problems and we won't have to go through the crap we went through this last time. So enough being said, we do have a hard stop we have to go through. So call the meeting order, the roll call. If anybody has any objections as far as the approval of the minutes and all that, they are recorded, so we don't have to worry about that. Darrell, if you want to go ahead and take it, we'll start business with that presentation and go from it.
Okay. Thomas, are you on?
Yes, I'm on.
Cool, okay. Because I got you. The view that I have shows that you're view only, and now I see where you're talking from. So I'm going to pull up the and let me know. Mr. Stagg, can y'all see that?
I can see it.
Okay, Thomas, I'm going to let you take it away, and you tell me when to turn slides.
Okay. Sounds great. Thank you, Darrell.
First, let me introduce you. How about that, Thomas? This is Thomas Dudley and his partner, Ali, and I'm not sure how to pronounce that last name, so I'm not going to even try, but this study was commissioned by the county to be a supporting document or supporting method for what we're doing in the long-range planning. It's Itri Orea. They're part of NC State University. They have been working on this at about the same length that we've been working on the long-range plan. So we brought them here this morning. They are pretty close to being finished, so I wanted to give Thomas an opportunity to go over with the admin committee how they got to where they are and what they found so far. Thomas?
Excellent. Thank you very much. This is Thomas Dudley with ORA and Itri. I'm joined today by my colleague, Dr. Ali Hajbabe. And this morning we're going to be describing the process that we've been going through with this study and sharing some preliminary results about the station optimization side of things. Darrell, if you would go to the next slide here. So conceptually, we split the project into three phases. First, we start with the validation of the NFDA standard 1720 and its application for Wake County. The reason that there is because we wanted to know, is it going to be appropriate in 10 years to still be using the current response standard that you're using today, given the residential development and other population growth that we know is occurring and even continuing to occur given COVID. So next in phase two, we've been looking at station optimization, both new station siting and closures. And then phase three is, of course, the write-up of the process. Next slide, please. And so parallel to the organizational and the actual phasing of things, we have the outline here talking about phase one first, and then looking at phase two before we have the opportunity for next steps and further discussion after that. Next slide. Okay, so the first phase revolves around current FDA standard 1720, and is it going to be appropriate and for the foreseeable future? And so in order to do that, we kind of have to work our way backwards here. So verifying 1720 requires developing a high-resolution population forecast for Wake County going out 10 years. What that requires is sort of allocating that population total big picture number that we get from the Office of State Budget and Management at the county level down to the actual neighborhoods and subdivisions that, you know, compose Wake County. And just as a general modeling note, we know that the higher resolution we do that at, the better. So if we're looking at neighborhoods, that's a lot better than, you know, looking at, you know, regions or something like that. And the way that we're able to do this high resolution population forecast is by introducing a data set that we use for the schools work that we do for Wake County Public Schools. And we call that the planning unit. If you'll go to the next slide here. So we're very comfortable with GIS, and this is one of the GIS data sets that we use, the planning units. It's a way of capturing the unique development densities of all subdivisions, all neighborhoods, all rural areas for all of Wake County. We've got a large data set here with 6,000, over 6,000 individual little geometries that encapsulate growth. And this data set's updated every year. The key here is that it's a living data set that captures the residential development data from the interviews that we have with all the major municipal planning agencies. So every year we talk with Apex and Fuquay Marina and every other municipality, all 12 plus county planning, to get a sense of where residential developments are going to be coming in over the next 10 years. And so we have a really good sense of that data set, and that is a stable geometry over time, so it's easy for us to compare changes. With that sort of data in mind that we collected, we're able to look at the validation of 1720 on the next slide here. So, right, once we modeled for those new developments coming online, we're able to examine the underlying sort of population densities for each of the fire insurance districts, which is part of the metric for whether it's appropriate to use 1710 or 1720. Of course, the note there is, you know, that the population density is only one consideration there. You also have the station staffing as career versus volunteer in addition. But if we're looking just at the population density side of the standard, things are broken down by the three bullet points you've seen down there. Rural classification would be areas with fewer than 500 persons per square mile. Urban is over 1,000 persons per square mile, and suburban is in the middle there. So if you would go to the next slide here. So the results that you see on the left side are actually from your 2016-2017 staffing and deployment study. And on the right, we have our results for 10 years forward, which is 2029 from the time that we ran this analysis. What you can see in the far right column here is those classifications based on 1720 and whether these areas remain, you know, the same classification that they were in 2016 or not, and how they change. So what we see is that almost all of these are still rural or suburban in 10 years, which gives us what we need. It should be mentioned as well in the same breath here that this is what I would call a quote-unquote worst-case scenario, because annexations and changes in the USAs over time are not taken into account. So really what, you know, this says, you know, those new developments that are stretching out from, you know, Apex, for example, it just includes those as being part of your coverage area, even though we know that municipal coverage would extend in those areas, for example. So it's with that population on the planning unit data set that we have that we can start looking at doing the station optimization side, both with new station openings and closures as well.
Thomas, can I stop you right there for a second?
Sure.
I want to make sure y'all heard what he said, because if you remember the study before the staffing and deployment study that Director Camposano did, had a lot of future populations that were never met. I am sure that the same thing happened then that is happening now. This lookout into 2029, I want to make sure you heard what Thomas says, does not account for annexations. So when you look at, and I'm going to just use the alert district, you know, it shows their population going to 25,200, but that doesn't account how much that the town of Knightdale is going to annex in that. So that is a very key point as Thomas moves forward with his presentation, is making sure that you heard him when he said that, is this does not take into account annexations. Sorry about that, Thomas. I just want to make sure that is important.
Yeah, thank you for that. Yes. Sure. So with that, we can go on to the next slide here. All right, so this has certainly been an iterative process where we've gone through a lot of different versions of things, and that's often the way applied research goes. So really the major recent improvement that we have that we, you know, are happy to be able to say we modeled and really sort of the major breakthrough of the project is this first bullet point here of modeling the probability component of meeting 1720. The sort of technical term for that and what we use is called chance constraints. And what that does is it fully incorporates and models those percentage constraints that are part of the response standard. So for an urban area, you know, we're talking about needing to reach, needing to meet that response time 90% of the time. For a suburban area, needing to meet that response time 80% of the time. So we're excited to have a model that really fully incorporates that percentile component. And sort of just to state yet another way here, that's also the advancement from deterministic modeling to probabilistic travel time modeling. So that's something we're very pleased with. With that, we can go on to the next slide here. And this map shows the resulting solution when you task the model with minimizing that system-wide travel time and you're allowing it to open four stations. So speaking to the symbology here, we have the green squares, of course, are your existing stations that are considered part of this analysis, part of this ecosystem. And the yellow crosses are the new station locations, which are based on, with the red numbering indicating the priority. So the one down in the south, sort of east of Fuquay Varina, with the one next to it, that would be the highest priority one. And you can tell based on just sort of taking a look at this for a minute, what the algorithm is doing here, what the model is doing is it's identifying places, the sweet spots between existing stations where a new station, if it were to go in, would significantly decrease the overall system-wide travel time. So especially in areas where you have, this is looking at neighborhoods that are underserved based on your current configuration of where your stations are. So that's the new station side of things. I wanted to just kind of pause there and give you a minute to process this because I know it took us quite a bit of time to get to this particular slide. So I want to just give a minute to for you all to process it and this and then ask any questions if you have them.
Thomas, I do have a question. Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
So what are the times used? I know you use 1720 and then based off population projections. Go over the times that you use. Was it travel only, total response time, and what were those times?
Right, so that's a great question because, you know, it's good for us to all be on the same page about how that's being modeled. So as a way to do something consistent across the entire system-wide area, what we've been modeling is travel time, not the full response time. So what we've been doing is as we've, you know, trying to meet those targets established in 1720, what we've been doing is taking 90 seconds off of that travel time or off of the total response time to allow for your turnout time. So for a urban area, we're saying a travel time of 7.5 minutes 90% of the time, for suburban 8.5 minutes 80% of the time, and then rural 12.5 minutes 80% of the time. So I know that's certainly maybe a topic for discussion as well, but that's what we're currently using.
Anybody else has any questions for Thomas? Remember that you're star to unmute yourself. It's been about a month or so since we've been on a Uber type call, so star if you're using your phone to unmute yourself. Let's get all the questions identified here from everything that he's talked about so far before we move forward.
I've got Carol. So go ahead.
Daryl, can you hear me? This is Leroy.
Yes, sir.
So last night at our town council meeting, a group called Plan Wake came out and put out their Wake County comprehensive plan and talked about a lot of services, parks, and different things like that. And they did the same sort of thing that you're seeing here with they divided the county into rural, suburban. There was like another sort of a hybrid rural area, but there was no mention of fire stations or anything like that in that comprehensive plan. Their plan is to present this to the Wake County commissioners in February. I don't know if there's any, have they worked with this group or not?
Thomas, have you heard anything on Plan Wake?
The name is familiar. I mean, just sort of tangentially, I haven't worked with them in any level of detail, no.
So the one gentleman that was on there, his name was Maloney. I am not sure 100% what his role is, but I would think if they're going to take this plan to the Wake County commissioners and designate areas as rural, suburban, urban, as they showed on their map last night, isn't it going to be counterintuitive if we go in there with a different interpretation of the communities?
It would be. Tim Maloney actually works with Wake County Planning. So, Thomas, you want to talk about the data that you got from the different groups?
Sure. So, yeah, Tim would be sort of I think he's the manager of our main contact with county planning. So as part of this effort, what we've done is reached out to every planning agency of the municipalities in Wake and county planning, and had yearly interviews with them where we look at maps and we look at GIS data sets that we coordinate with, and we send a lot of data back and forth about where new developments are coming online. And we model things like, you know, how many units are going in, what's the density going to be for that development in terms of units, lots, or units per acre, when's that coming online, when's the start date for the first CO, when's the end date for the last CO being issued, you know, is it going to be senior living, is it going to be, you know, what sort of development is it going to be, and all of this information that we've collected every year feeds into this effort that you're seeing here as far as what development's going to occur by 2029, relying almost exclusively really on the input from the planners. So there's a very strong relationship there between this analysis and directly from the planners. If you ask the planning directors about this data collection effort, they're familiar with it related to schools, but they may not know that it's also related to this side of things as well.
So Daryl, can I follow up on that? If wouldn't this carry a whole lot more weight if it was a unified presentation between Wake County Planning, this Plan Wake, and the results of the study that we're doing, and they did it to the county commissioners all at once?
I'm not sure so let's talk about this study for a second. Again, this is a supporting document to what we're working on here as an overall long-range plan. So I may be completely off base, and this is y'all's study. So I want to make that clear. Anyway, this isn't Darrell's or Wake County's. We're helping y'all along with this, but what I envisioned taking place, and I may be completely off base, was that we used the results of this study looking at where possible new stations should go and possible closures, but we're not looking to open a station next week or close a station next week. We start taking our data that we're going to look at over the next year against all the benchmarks and that we've put together so far, you know, whatever time we end up, and we use everything together to come up with, hey, we are not meeting what our travel time is in this particular area. And not only can we show that on the data side, we had an independent company that come in and looked at it, and they also identified it as a major growth area and a sweet spot to where they thought a good station would go. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess, and Mr. Stagg, too, what I was simply suggesting that if this planned wake is going to put a 10-year or however far out they looked, and they're using census data for this with population, that maybe the information that we have in our study, if we could coordinate with them, would at least lay some foundation. Hey, if this development that Plan Wake is looking at in this corridor here is going to take place in the next 10 years, these are the baseline requirements or what we're looking at for a fire station or to meet the service demands. If this happens, they're not going to fall within our standard of cover, our guidelines. And we need to consider that if this grows like this, that there's going to have to be more resources.
And Chief Smith, your point is well taken. I'm just sitting here trying to process. It may be a good idea for maybe myself and Thomas and Mr. Stagg and maybe Chief Herman and Chief McGee, who's really taking the lead roles on this, to have a Teams meeting or Zoom meeting with Mr. Maloney and let him look at the stuff that we put together and maybe try to collaborate. Does that sound kind of what you're looking for?
My I guess the flip side of the coin is, my fear would be is if all this work goes into this study and we show all these things, but this Plan Wake goes in and does their presentation in a few months, when the county commissioners were to see our study, they'll be like, well, Plan Wake said this, but you're showing something different. I'm just saying, collaboration, there's strength in numbers.
I agree with you 100%. Yep. So if it's okay with the group, I will set something up with a few members of this committee and Thomas's group and Mr. Maloney to see how these things hopefully marry together and look very similar.
I think it's a real good idea to do that, Darrell, because the one thing we don't want to do is get the commissioners confused. They pretty much are going to be used to hearing stuff about population projections and all that from a global. When you knock it down to fire, if they're not looking at it from the same sheet of music, I'm not sure how fast this plan would go through, and all this work, I don't want it to sit and collect dust any longer than it has to. We've done this too many times.
Yes, sir.
Thomas. And I understand, you know, the algorithm and using population density and projections from county planning. How do you balance areas like watershed areas where you have minimum lot sizes and typically you'll see, you know, houses from 10 to 15,000 square foot built, which really, you know, the population density is going to be low for that area, but you have a target hazard that's really similar to a commercial hazard in comparison. Is any Now, I know that's probably hard to balance that, but any thought that went into that?
There are a couple parts there. So, I mean, it would be classified based on your description as being a rural area. And then as far as the sort of hazard that you're talking about, if I'm understanding you correctly, I mean, the model as it calculates the paths from fire stations to neighborhoods is going to take into consideration, you know, it's going to rely on the underlying road network, and that's something I should have stressed earlier. So when we're looking at how these things all connect to each other, we're using the TRM data set, which is the Triangle Regional Model Road Network, which is what CAMPO uses for their long-range planning efforts, and it's been maintained by ITRI in the past as well, but it would consider, you know, what obstacles there are and, you know, the actual observed travel times as far as expecting how your vehicles could actually make it to these neighborhoods. That does also bring up a separate point, too, that, you know, as we looked at calculating those population densities, we did exclude water. So we did use habitable area as well.
Thank you.
Hey, Thomas, another question here. So let's look at number one there, your recommendation. So obviously we realize that that's a suburban, I believe, area, so you're using an 8.5 minute travel time to where that cross is located. How big of an area does that cover, though? If we're truly going to use this information to make decisions on building a fire station, what type of area that does that cover that's not being covered, that's being covered by existing station? You know, is the juice worth the, is it worth the squeeze? Is what I'm, you know, is there any kind of information or data supporting that?
So that's a great question, and it directly applies to the school's work we do, because what you're asking about is attendance zone. That's the parallel. So for the effort that it would take to get that from the model, I'm going to need to rely on Ali, if he's still on the call, and sort of just try to think through how we could get that from the code that we currently have. Do you have any thoughts on that, Ali?
Yeah, I think it is possible to get the areas that are covered. But one thing that I want to emphasize is that with these openings that you see, all areas, all neighborhoods in Wake County are covered within the required response times that we have in the standard, 1720 standard. It is possible for us to show for a pair of fire station or neighborhoods, or for each neighborhood, what would be the travel time to get to that based on what we have from the model, and either show it on the map or have big, really big tables that we can look them up and get those information.
Okay, and I mean, I guess my biggest question, I mean, what determined, so we're only looking at four recommendations out of the entire county, what actually would determine, is it one neighborhood that we're not reaching in 8.5 minutes, or did it require to be, we're not reaching 10,000 people, so we need, you know, any kind of parameter there, especially looking at number four that's right on the county line, and knowing that area, it just seems like an odd location.
Yeah. So what it, did you want to say something, Ali?
Go ahead.
Yeah, I wanted to say that there is a way for us to find out what population is not being served, for example, within 7.5 minutes or whatever the threshold is, but without even opening any station. Our analysis shows that we only violate the travel time 13 times. And 13 times meaning for 13 neighborhoods, okay? And that violation I don't have the numbers in front of me, but based on what I remember, it's not a huge violation from either 8.5 or 12.5 minutes that we have. Now, each of these stations that you open is gonna have, the first thing that is gonna happen is that it's gonna reduce the travel time that you have in the entire Wake County. The effect that you may see is not that one of the neighborhoods that that we had, that we were providing response more than, let's say, 7.5 minutes. Now we are reducing that to less than 7.5 minutes. But what you see is that overall response time or travel time in Wake County would be reduced.
Yeah, and to sort of follow up on that too, I mean, there were some of those neighborhoods that, you know, were not within that travel time target. And then an initial version of this new siding work, you know, that's where the new stations would go. You know, there's one neighborhood somewhere, and it just decides, well, there's a huge penalty associated with that, so put a station there. But as we've incorporated that percentage, that percentile that's part of the standard, we're no longer looking at issues like that. So that's one of the reasons why we've been excited about that recent modeling improvement.
Thomas, I'm gonna try to put this in. We have a running joke in the fire service. I'm gonna try to put this in fireman terms, and you tell me if I've got it right or not. With the addition of the four stations here, it puts everything, if you look at Wake County as a whole in the rural area, it brings the model down to where you're covering within whatever time that you plugged in the model to run, it brings everything within the 90th percentile. Is that correct?
Darren, that is correct. So with four stations, all response times are going to be within the 90th percentile. And also, if I want to compare, this is just some numbers from the optimization. When you open four fire stations, the total travel time is reduced by around 10% in Wake County. So that's one number to keep in mind. If we open one fire station, we have something in the order of 5% reduction. If we open two fire stations, it's a little bit more than 5%. And when we get to four fire stations, we are going to have close to 10% reduction in total travel time. In all of these cases, our analysis shows that we still can meet those response time 90% of time.
So without these four stations, we can still meet the 90 percentile.
That is correct. That's what our analysis shows. And what I want to caution everyone about is that these are all based on travel times that are coming from the TRM model. And we need to all be careful that while that's the best numbers that we have, there is always some stochasticity, some changes in traffic condition that may cause longer or shorter travel time. But the short answer is that even without opening one, we meet the 90th percentile threshold.
Hey,
Daryl. Hey, hold one second. We got multiple people talking, so let's go Chief Criddle, then David Handy, and then Leroy. So, Chief Criddle, saw you first.
Yeah, just out of curiosity, is this model rural mileage only, or was there any consideration to the frequency of calls in an area? Because there's a lot more to where you place the station than just travel time. I get it that you're saying that you cover the whole place with the proper travel time 90% of the time, but you might consider, if this model doesn't consider, adding in some features of how often calls are not being met in that area, you know, call volume and severity, I think, are two elements that probably have to be added to a station location model, that's all.
And Chief Criddle, I think on your point, that is where where we look at things over the maybe the next calendar year. Once this group, the admin committee, picks that travel time, I think those are where we look at, okay, we had, Morrisville had 10 calls that was outside of 7 minutes in the rural area. I think we examined that area closer on our side. And I'll let Thomas say, I don't know that this model can do that.
So, I mean, that's certainly been a topic that's come up. I know we've sort of batted it around as far as, you know, being a potential sort of consideration. Without, you know, absolutely living it and seeing, you know, the examples of that, I can't specifically say one direction or the other how much that would influence the results. As far as the practicality of how it could be implemented, again, I would need to rely on Ali for that.
Yeah, I think the short answer is that our model at this stage does not include anything to account for let's say how many calls the station is going to get, or pretty much the workflow. I'm just thinking about how we can somehow include that, but at the top of my mind, I don't have an answer for that I can say we can do it or we cannot. There may be a way to do it. It just needs a little bit more thinking.
Chief Criddle, are you still on?
Yeah, I'm on. I had a technical difficulty over here.
Okay, you moved on my screen, so I didn't know if you got bumped off.
Well, you know, mute is right next to hang up. Put it out there, you know.
Did that answer your question, or at least tell you that maybe we couldn't answer your question right now?
Yeah, it was just an important point that we brought up, that this study appears to be road mileage and reaching within travel time, which is a cool metric, and it's a part of the puzzle, but it's not the whole part of the puzzle. You could have an area where a station needs to go, and it might do a lot for the system as far as reaching some road miles, but it might do very little for the system as far as increasing system performance because of frequency. For instance, you have a station that might answer 500 calls in a year, and it'll increase the road coverage by 80% in that area, but you know, you might have another area that only going to increase 10% in road miles, but it's going to run 3,000 calls. I mean, those are drastic numbers, but you know, there's other elements that need to be considered, I would say, when you're going to place fire stations.
Point well taken, and you kind of went back over what I said at the beginning. This is only a supporting document of the whole thing. This one piece is not a decision tool. Mr. Handy, I think you were next.
Yes, and I guess a follow-up on what Chief Criddle was just saying, which is the models are great, but models really need to be verified and, you know, comparing of actual versus modeled. And I just want to say that we are starting to get really high-quality data rolling in on what are actual response times. Like, we know for every emergency call what the actual time is between when the call was received by 911 and when, you know, people showed up on site, and even what part of that was dispatch time versus turnout time versus, you know, travel time. So we have this really high resolution data, and we've got months of it, and it's coming in real time, and it would be really great to correlate, you know, do a comparison of these, you know, 90 seconds plus on-road travel time modeling estimates that were used to produce this map with like actual data, and it would be very interesting to see what the difference is between them. And it probably would highlight what Chief Creel just said about, you know, issues with call volume and severity. And I guess one question I'd have for our presenters is there anything on the roadmap for doing any kind of model validation of that level? And if not, can you at least provide some raw data so that somebody else could do that?
So we'd be glad to sort of be in that conversation and discuss things and
sort of do whatever we can to try to calibrate the results that we have, because, I mean, the term that I use when talking about these travel times is that they model travel times, and they're the best data available as far as, you know, what speeds are reasonable depending on the time of day and sort of that type of information. But and there was some examination that we had as far as and Daryl can help me about what the source of this data set was. We had some information about response times and, you know, when the first vehicle got there and that type of thing going back to, I think, 2015, but there was just so much noise with that data set that it was really difficult to try to glean something useful from it. So that was kind of the last update on that effort that we went through.
So we provided them the calendar year CAD raw data for them to look at as they were doing this. And as y'all know, y'all looked at that. That is kind of messy to look at sometimes. I think Darren's product that he put together is a lot better. And I actually sent ITRE the link to that, and I'm not sure. I only sent that to them about maybe 30 days ago at the most, so I'm not sure how much of that they looked at.
Okay, and that all makes sense, and we're actually very aware of the messiness of the previous data. That's been a big topic of, you know, our prior administrative committee meetings. But just to let you all know, we have very high quality data rolling in now, and we're definitely getting to a point where we could take a neighborhood, we could take the modeled, you know, response time and compare it with actual response times to calls in that neighborhood, and I think that would be a very high value study for us to do. And even if you're not in a position to do that, we could, if you could somehow provide the data in a format of like, here's the neighborhoods, you know, with GPS, by GPS location, and here's our modeled response times, we could fill in the gap there with the actual versus modeled.
David, our model can give that information so that from this fire station, it's going to take this amount of time to provide service to this neighborhood. And I guess that's what you need for the verification.
Yeah, I think that is exactly where we're going to be at, hopefully 6 to 7 months from now, as we start really examining this data and finding the shortfalls. Then we go back and we look at the data that y'all have from the Campo, and we apply it with the actual data that we're seeing, actual what it takes a fire truck to get there. And I think all those things together support when we say, hey, we need this based on X. Mr. Handy, did that kind of answer your question before we move to Chief Smith?
Yeah, I'm good.
Okay. Chief Smith?
Hey, Darrell, I want to test a couple of assumptions here. So the station results is based on travel time or road mileage right now today. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yeah.
Okay. So if we have a lot of calls, overlapping calls, and say the number three, one of the things that we could do is put an additional resource into that area to cover those calls. That's something we can do internally. But did you guys, when you did this model, did you look at existing facilities to see where there were, if there were any gaps in coverage or any overlaps in the travel time? And is there a way to phase this out, as we said, in 2029, from the plan they presented last night, they're saying 250,000 more people in Wake County proper in the next 10 years. Is there a way to add, like Scott was saying, a subdivision maybe with some road miles in it, just to kind of look and phase this in? So like station one, you are this new station one, that would be 2024. New station two, as stuff grows there, 2026. Because going and just doing these four recommended stations with no impact on the 90th percentile now, I think it's just going to be a hard no.
So what we do see is consistently what these priorities are. They come up as far as the exact year of when one station comes online. There's this balance between what the total system-wide travel time is versus when these stations come online. As far as like getting the exact year right, we didn't set up the population forecast in a way that we can easily switch between years. So it is possible. I hear what you're saying. We could go back and do the analysis to rerun it for different years and then sort of cascade things. It would just be a, because of how we set things up, it would be a significant time sink to do that.
Maybe I'm not explaining what so let's take the incident that Daryl talked about with Morrisville Station. So Chief Criddle has the area of his station that's rural. Over the next year, there's 10 calls that are outside of the 90th percentile. Is this model able to look at if we put another engine in an existing facility in Chief Criddle's department, would that cover those 10 outliers and bring them into compliance? What I'm saying is, how did we do this? Did we look at just the first engine on the scene, or what did you use to determine this?
I see what you mean. Okay. So this would be the travel time associated with that first apparatus that gets onto the scene. And
I don't think they did anything, Chief Smith, with concurrent calls at this time. Is that correct,
okay,
Thomas?
Did they look at existing facilities also?
Like the stations? Like where your stations are now? Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes. All, okay. They run it from, we give them a list of all the stations.
Okay.
Any more questions so far before we move forward? I'm sure it's probably going to be the same amount of questions, and we got like 30 minutes. So if there's no more questions before we move forward, I want to make sure that I am crystal clear that this is a supporting document only, and that if a station shows up for a closure, it does not mean that we are running out and looking to close that station. It was simply done based upon previous studies. This particular optimization model, Thomas, and correct me if I'm wrong, doesn't do a very good job with closing stations, especially when we did not run any of the Raleigh or Cary stations within this model. So to kind of calibrate the model, we give them the list of closures that have been provided back all the way back to the first tri-data study and let them put them in and run it just for a calibration. And what you're about to see is what showed up. But again, I want to be clear that this doesn't mean that we're looking to run out and close stations, just as we're not looking to run out and open four stations until we do some validation of actually what is happening. Also, there are political things and the opportunities that doors that have never opened with the city of Raleigh and the city of Cary to do any coverage. So does anybody have any questions about what I said before I move forward? Okay. Thomas?
Okay, thank you. So obviously we split things into looking at the closure of stations and the opening of stations. Anytime you look at a closure of a station, you're going to be affecting the overall travel time system-wide. So it's a matter of which stations are, the least impactful to that change. And so just kind of talking through a little bit more about the recent improvements, because we have done several iterations of this closure work. Varying the travel time constraints by the neighborhoods based on that underlying population density, that was a recent change. Doing some QAQC or quality assurance, quality control check, and improvements to the code, specifically how it handles the TRM, Triangle Regional Model travel time data set. And then, the last bullet point here that Daryl spoke to as well. So with that, you can go to the next slide if you would.
Before we go to the next slide, Thomas, I want to ask you a question. When we injected these closures and you reran the optimization model, we still met the 90th percentile for coverage. Is that correct?
That is something that the model, as we are currently running it, does correctly handle. It does model that percentile chain.
Now, Thomas, if I may,
please.
In Daryl's response, yes, still we meet 90 percentile, and with these corrections, with these closures, we are not violating them.
So with these closures injected, as a county as a whole, getting to all the neighborhoods, we were still in the 90th percentile of the of the time that you injected.
Yes, that is correct. It does.
Thomas, can I just go to the next slide so we can get names on these, I think?
Yeah, let's zoom in. Yep.
Okay.
Okay, so what the neighborhood or what the model is doing here for the most part is looking at these sort of stations where there are very few neighborhoods in the coverage area served by those stations or stations that are in close proximity to other stations. You know, one of the things that, you know, I've sort of learned over the course of this study is that Bay Leaf number three, I grew up 2 minutes from there, and I had no idea that the county was operating that station. You know, just based on when you pull up the neighborhoods and the actual coverage area that you all are responsible for, there are just very few that are in that proximity. So I should have spoken to the symbology here as well. So we've got the numbering here on this slide means the one that, you know, when it says one next to Bay Leaf 3, that means that would be the candidate that would hurt the travel time the least. So that would be the one that, you know, if you were going to close one station potentially in the future, based on this analysis, that would be the first one that you would be looking at. As far as the second one, you're looking at Eastern Wake number two. Going to number three, we're talking about another example where there isn't a huge number of sort of those neighborhoods, those planning units that are in proximity that are part of the coverage area. We've got number four, Wake Forest, number five, New Hope, as or no, New Wake New Hope, number five. And then, it gets to a more difficult situation from a travel time perspective once you start working your way down the list because, you know, specifically for those first few that I was talking about, you are looking at a much reduced coverage area compared to, I assume, what it used to be before annexations and such. So that's... but then as we sort of work our way down the list, that becomes less and less the case. You see Wake New Hope number five and then Western Wake number one as being the sixth on the slide that we see here.
Thomas,
other notes about closures. Yeah, please go ahead.
Let me inject right quick. So I want to make sure that we reiterate that this did not take into account annexations and also that there were no Raleigh or carry stations injected into these runs. Now, since I first viewed this a few weeks ago, I have provided Thomas's group the stations that surround all of these, particularly the everything but Eastern Wake 2, the Raleigh and the carry stations, and say, run this model with these and see what it looks like. So I'm pretty sure they haven't had an opportunity to do that yet, because once they do this, this takes this computer system and this model, and I'm not a computer guy, and y'all know that, but some maybe 10, 12 hours to run once you do that. So they haven't done that, and particularly for the Eastern Wake 2, which is these addresses were provided long before the merger, but it doesn't take into account annexation. So town of Knightdale may be annexing areas down there, and the town may say, yeah, that showed up for a rural closure, but it really doesn't work well for us. So I just want to make sure that I interjected that in there because I'm sure Chief Cone was posed with a question. any, go ahead.
Sorry. Yeah, I have a question. The number three triangle, this is RFD 23. What's the RFD stand for?
That is a co-location of Durham Highway Station 2 and Raleigh Fire Department. And Thomas, we need to re-identify that as Durham Highway 2 when we make this presentation, you know, further on down, especially that needs to be Durham Highway 2 there instead of Raleigh 23.
Got it. Okay.
And Chief Pope, we'll make the changes too on the bay leaf. Thomas, if we can make all those bay leafs Northern Wake, and I'll get with you on the numbering too, to so that we're looking at current values.
Okay.
Any questions? Remember, you're muted. ** to unmute yourself. All right. Thomas?
Okay. Great. So, next, you know, we're talking about phase three, and then also coordinating some on some of the additional items that have come up as part of this call. So, you know, Darrell and I will be following up along with Ali. You know, when it comes to actually writing up the process, we have a draft at this point, but we're going to be further refining that and just stressing again the big picture and, you know, what we're trying to do, and what we've heard more from during this call is how this analysis is, how it can be relevant for you and how it fits into your broader long-range facility plan sort of framework. So it's been valuable to hear the comments today, and we'll be, you know, following up additionally, hearing about, you know, how we can best, you know, put the pieces together with that. With that, are there any other topics for discussion or questions today before we sign off?
Anybody else have any questions for ITRE before Thomas and Ali sign off? Mr. Stagg, you have anything, or Chief McGee or Chief Herman on this?
I don't have anything. I appreciate their time and the quality of this presentation. That cleared a lot of questions with me.
I guess just my only question is, I just heard from Ali that he had the capability of you know, for a given location, giving us like the modeled response time. Just wondering what form, and I'm just making a request if that could actually be made available to us. That I think me and Darren Hope would really love to take a look at that. Just do some spot checking on things and just get it, just to get a, I don't know, just get a better feel for it. Would it be possible, like to make a web service available or something where we could just plug in a coordinate location and get your modeled response time? I guess would be my request.
We'd be glad to coordinate on that. I mean, what the format that it's currently in is a origin destination matrix that's about 250 megabytes. So we could figure out some way to share that, and that might get you, we can join that over to the neighborhoods that we have in GIS and things like that, and yeah, we can figure that out.
Okay, yeah, 250 megabytes is pretty small, so maybe you'll just go that route of just using that.
Okay.
Thomas, and this is things that we can talk about offline, but maybe we can, is there a way to just to maybe make that as part of the end product, is the sharing of that, I think you called it point of origin or whatever it was.
Yeah, the origin destination.
There you go. That.
Sure.
All right. Thomas and Ali, thank you so much. I'll be in touch over the next few days. And
Darrell, and I'll thank you all for giving us this opportunity to share the results with you.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for the time. We appreciate it.
Yes, thank you, guys.
All right, bye. Talk to you soon. All right, bye-bye.
Let's let Darrell get the screen clear for the next part.
Well, we're going to probably need to just schedule another day this week if that's possible with everybody. Chief Herman's and Chief McGee's presentation on what they're putting together, as you know, the prep work for the fire commission meets, probably going to take a little longer than 20 minutes, and probably no need to even get started. Chief Herman, you agree?
Yes, sir. That might be best. I hate to do a whole nother meeting. So we've been working together on a presentation to go alongside with the report. You know, if you remember the last meeting we had, we went over the report that was created. So we worked on a PowerPoint. I think it's about 25 slides that will be used at the fire commission meeting coming up in January. And we just wanted to present that to you first and get feedback. So it's going to take longer than the time we have. So, yeah, because we still got to go over this result page here that Darrell was pulling up as well. I will say while I'm talking, you know, the presentation we just saw, I agree with Darrell 100% that it's used as a supporting documentation to what we're presenting. I think it would be really confusing to be separate and present it and then turn around and we present, you know, which one are we going with? What are we doing? Are we recommending what they did? I think it would work better as a tool to support what we're going to recommend. I think we all saw a few flaws in what they did. I think there's some validation to what they did, but I also think there's a lot of things left off the table. One thing that our study and our recommendation looks at in more detail is number of firefighters and how quick they arrive, not only first unit, because that's all they looked at, but that ERF piece of how quickly we're putting 16 people on the scene. So I think ours is a deeper dive into that. And their information can just back up what we're saying.
Agreed. So anybody have any heartburn about having another meeting relatively quickly to make sure that we get what Chief Herman and Chief McGee have presented? Because we've got a commission meeting coming up, and although it's a couple of weeks away, it still can sneak up quickly. So if they're heartburn, let it be heard. If not, Darrell, can you schedule a meeting ASAP for us?
I'm looking at my calendar. I can go tomorrow, but I know some of y'all like kill me when I schedule last minute meetings. Friday, do y'all want to try to do something Friday morning at maybe 9 o'clock, 9:30?
I'm good Friday morning.
Yeah, I'm good Thursday or Friday.
Works for me.
Chief Pope?
And if you can't get on, what I could do is I'll send the presentation to Darrell for him to email out. And if you're unable to join, just look through it and shoot any kind of questions. To be honest, you guys have seen most of it. You're probably tired of hearing about it. This is, remember, it's for the fire commission members, so just kind of wanted to just a condensed version of the report. So we're just looking feedback.
Mr. Stagg, could I ask for some flexibility? We're not going to meet our public meeting notice obligation, so let's call Friday morning at 9 a work session just to go over what we may present and then schedule a formal meeting next week where y'all would make a recommendation or something like that. So are you okay with Friday just being a unrecorded, unpublicized work session?
Sure.
Anybody have any objection to that? Mr. Handy?
Just a question on that. Does a work session have to be private or can we allow people to log in anyway?
I will put it on the calendar. I will have Diana put it on the calendar, but we do not meet our, you know, per se obligation. I will be glad to put it on the calendar and list it as a work session. But y'all know that we can't do any formal recommendations at that meeting on Friday.
Right. Okay. Right. So we can't do like a legal vote then, but I would like to at least make it possible for people to log in that have been logging in and observing anyway.
Absolutely. Yep, we can do that.
Okay.
Mr. Stagg, you okay with that?
Absolutely.
Okay.
And then please send a document ahead of time too, just so I, you know, I just want to be prepared.
Yep. Chief Herman will get that to me and I'll get it out either today or first thing in the morning.
I will also send the updated report. So several of you had comments on the report itself, and I've made those changes. So we'll send that, the 20-page document out, and then also the PowerPoint presentation. And, Darryl, I'm glad you brought that up because we really do need to vote on it because we haven't officially adopted those response times that we've inserted in there. So I think there's no heartburn with what we put in there with the 7 minutes and the 12 minutes, but we need to officially vote on that.
Right, so I will look for a date next week for an official meeting so that we can meet our public notice obligation and then a work session on Friday morning at 9 o'clock. Right quick, we've got like maybe 15 or 20 minutes. Can you still see my screen, Mr. Stagg?
Yes, sir.
These are, we had our, I call her our Power BI guru lady in the county, pull this out and just put together kind of a one-pager on what I call the important documents. I think Chief Herman has this particular page inserted into the presentation that he's working on. But if you look, it kind of captures everything. The top 10 words that were pulled out to describe fire services, quality of fire services important to 93% of the people. Timeliness, there was 92% were satisfied with the timeliness we had now, 92% supported additional funding, and 65% said there were enough fire departments already. 1,384 responses, only 74% watched the video, 59% had never had a service from the fire department. This was kind of interesting to me that 49% of the folks said that the individual fire departments should set their own response standards. 28 said national, 23 said community. Fire department response times, less than 5 minutes is kind of what I thought going into it. Most everybody's going to want you there as quick as possible. 5 to 7 was in the 20%. And then arrival time, 37% said that they would like to see y'all there within 5 to 7 minutes, which kind of lines up with the 7 where we're at, which I think should be the top. If we're looking to get better, that should be the top of the benchmark. We should do things to try to get us there quicker than 7. I was very surprised at the number of responses. As I told y'all before, our communications team said if we got back 200 to 300, they would consider it a valid survey based on their findings in the county. So we got back 1,384. There were two big districts, which are probably two of our larger, they are the two largest districts for not-for-profit fire departments. They probably generated the majority of responses, but it was spread out some.
I looked at the survey responses a bit, and I noticed a very strong correlation between, like, service response time and satisfaction with service received. Like, it was a really strong correlation there.
Right.
Darryl, if I may, I just want to make a statement, just a thought. And you hit on it just a minute ago. If you look at our current data, we're looking right now that we're, as a system, we're about a 7-minute travel time, 90 percentile currently. But, if we state in our document that's going to be presented that 7 is our standard of cover or service level objective, I just want everybody to realize that, in reality, that's a 12-minute response time when you look at call processing time and turnout time added to that. And when you look at the current information that's provided as far as flashover, cardiac arrest survival, those citizens that receive services in 12 minute plus, you know, have really not a lot of survival hope there. So I agree, seven. You know, if we say seven, I mean that I think is proper to say that, you know, that is what our current performance is, but we should try to do better than that as far as our travel time. Seven to me is just, you know, in my heart, it's just too high.
Well, and I agree, and that's why I really want to take like our current response time data that we're getting in, the real accurate data, and plug it into the model from Thomas and Ali that they came up with and compare. So they made, you know, compare the travel time they say their model shows versus actual response time for like a medical call, like you just said.
And I would tie this to it. And so I think that's a great first step, but you got to look at what the outcome of the event was as well to see. So you tie a correlation of arrival time or response time to outcome. That's where, I mean, to me, that's where the rubber hits the road.
Is that even available to us? Like,
you would have to go to individual departments and you would be dependent upon their report. How thorough they do reports is truly your answer.
Well,
there,
you know, it definitely would be worth taking a couple of dozen incidents and tracing that back and getting some qualitative data like that.
David, I think you're exactly right, and that's where we go. I'm going to use a phrase that Chief Pope uses all the time. Even though we're a system, I don't think we can use the same brush to paint every district. So if you know, if we see, and I'm going to just use Northern Wake since Chief Pope was talking, you know, if we see in 10, 12 minute travel times on certain calls there, we go actually pull those reports, as Chief McGee said, and hopefully Chief Pope has his people filling out detailed reports. You can go in there and see, hey, this was a 12 minute response, but we still confined it to the room of origin. Or it was a 12 minute response and it wasn't even confined to the building of origin. Chief McGee, is that kind of where you were going with that?
Yeah, the only caveat that you don't have captured in a typical NIFRS report is any sort of a data field that says what you found upon arrival. That may be words in a narrative, but that's hard to search and pull in a reporting system. Because the limitation here is how advanced was the event, whether it's cardiac arrest or whether it's a house fire. How far advanced was it upon it being reported by 911? Because, you know, we if we don't know about it, we don't have the opportunity to positively impact anything. And so that's the one element that's always going to be a limitation of your research, truthfully. But, again, the best we can do is look at the outcome and tie outcome to response times.
Yes, sir.
And if I can interject real quick, I mean, we're getting close to crunch time here, and we've got to come up with a decision. And, Chief Pope, I agree with you 100%. We all want to improve upon that, but we got to remember a couple of things. Number one, we're talking about rural fire protection or unincorporated. And number two, when we're looking at supporting documentation, when we got NFPA 1720 telling us 7 to 11 minutes for the first unit travel time and then a Center for Public Safety Excellence recommending a 7-minute travel time for the unincorporated areas, it's kind of hard to put out there, hey, we want to do it in 5 minutes. And again, I'm saying 5 minutes of travel time. So NFPA, you all know 1710 is 4 minutes. It's not a department meeting.
I agree. There's a direct relationship into cost there as well, but that's not our decision. That's the decision of the county commissioners. And if you look at the responses from the citizens, 5 to 7 is the majority of the responses on what they expect. So I just want us to be careful that we don't leave us a way to improve upon what we're currently at. If we shouldn't say that 7 is perfectly acceptable. We're at 7. the supporting documents and NFPA and everything recommend 7, but you know, we feel like that, you know, we should try to strive to do better because arrest survival is, you know, below 50% if it's over 5 minutes. Because flashover occurs in 3 to 5 minutes today. I want to make sure that we leave us room to improve, or at least recommend that we improve.
Hey, I think there's plenty of room for improvement. You're right. As a county as a whole, we're right at 7 minutes, but over half of the departments aren't meeting that. So for an improvement factor, we've got, you know, 20-some districts not meeting a 7-minute travel time.
Here staying in Mississippi, but that 5 to 7 minutes, I can't remember from the survey. Isn't that what these residents are expecting once they pick up the phone? And 5 minutes would include turnout time and travel time.
Darren, no, we remember we inserted the video that kind of, well,
yeah, we did.
Yep.
Okay, yeah, right. That was for.
Well, no, you're right. I mean, we inserted a video and we said, take this into consideration that it takes 90 seconds.
Time what they want.
Yep.
Which, you know, and that's typically what you see in a survey is a 5 to 7 minute is what they want. We all would want that. That ain't happening in some of your biggest cities, anymore.
And the majority of the citizens said they're willing to help pay for it. They're looking at the survey.
Right.
Well, we need to make a decision before. I mean, we're looking to present January.
Yep, so that we can do that. Let's meet Friday morning and get the framework of the presentation worked on, and then we'll come back next week and y'all can make a decision on what you want to put in there and recommend it, hopefully.
But Darrell, am I not right? Because I just want to make sure that we're still on the same page that we discussed back before Christmas. Is the presentation to the fire commission is just going to be a draft document, and then there will be a period of time for boards, city commissioners, or whoever to review that and come back with feedback for a final presentation. Is that still the plan?
The plan is to do the presentation on January 21st to the Fire Commission and not ask for a recommendation until the next meeting in March. So that would give 60 days for any feedback or anything like that, and then we would bring them a final document in March for a recommendation.
So based upon the feedback, there could be changes to the final document?
That will be up to y'all as an admin committee.
But I would say we need to be on the same page in January when we present, because that has the recommendations in it.
Yeah.
I mean, I would say we presented the final report months ago and received feedback. From that feedback, you know, we put together final recommendations. From our committee, I should say that. I'm not saying from the fire commission. They may want to throw something in there.
Anybody else?
Yeah, I think we're getting close to your drop dead time.
Yes, sir.
You got another minute. So let's just go ahead and adjourn the meeting, remembering that we're scheduled. Darrell, you sent out a meeting reminder for Friday, and we'll go with that.
I will send out a meeting invitation for Friday. I think Chief Herman will email me the packet today, and I will send that out to you along with that meeting invitation as a work session. I'll have Diana put it on the public calendar, and then we'll schedule a meeting next week to finalize everything, hopefully.
I'm good with it. Anything else for the next? No. Anyway, if everybody got that meeting, we'll go ahead and adjourn. Thank you for everything you guys do. Be safe. And for those that can, we will see you Friday.
Thank you, guys.
Good hunting in Mississippi there, Derek.
Thank,